Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview the ninth round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Spanish Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Mr. Timo Albers-Daly. How are you?
Good. Good. I've had a long day, mainly talking about the Indy 500. There was a whole podcast for that, which I then had to listen to edit and turn around in quick order because we've got Detroit immediately this weekend because there is no respite whatsoever, and then write an article on the Indy 500 with other people writing about the Indy 500. So I'm quite glad to be here talking about the Spanish Grand Prix because there is no Indy 500 hopefully in here anywhere. How are you?
Yeah, I've also had a day full of high workload, and I'm ready to sort of decompress by talking Formula One for a bit and just sort of reveling in a hobby and passion for a little while.
Would it help if you had, say, a soft drink or a savoury snack partner to do that?
Well, that is a very good link to our first news segment. And you know what, actually, I really would go for a cold Pepsi and some Doritos about now. Formula One has a new soft drinks and savoury snack partner. PepsiCo has come on board as a new partner with the sport, bringing with them their array of brands, including Doritos. I think we've also got Gatorade and like another one as well, which is like their own energy drink. Originally when I wrote this news out, I sort of finished it off with the sentence, so I'm looking forward to the Dorito 300 around the circuit of the Americas, which is apparently a very sort of foresightful joke because Gatorade will directly be sponsoring the remaining sprint races of the season. So it will sort of be something like the Gatorade Belgian Formula One sprint race. Hurrah.
Yeah, and before that particular news come out, I'd written it's turning a bit into NASCAR if we're not careful. The Coca-Cola 600, and we've literally, it's not even been 5 minutes and we've had this. I'm not sure I'm happy about that. And aside from a lot of money, I'm really not sure what any of these partnerships are meant to achieve or why we're meant to get excited for any of it. You see what we did with Disney last week, what they're doing this week then with Pepsi and Doritos, and they bring out these Instagram posts and reels and announcements and videos, and you go, and what are we going to throw Doritos on the circle? Oh, yes, I said aside from a lot of money, but what are we, the fans, getting out of it? Nothing. Oh, do we get some overpriced Doritos at the Grand Prix now? Yes. Is that good? No? So, yeah, Doritos.
I think
the fans meant to get excited for this sort of thing?
Well, apparently a lot of people saw Daniel Ricciardo's nose in the advert that sort of released it, but he's openly said that he's not coming back to Formula One, so that's kind of a moot point.
And also means the square root of sod all of the best.
Yeah, I think they just happened to use an actor in a helmet who looked a little bit like Daniel Ricciardo because they knew that would get clicks. I wouldn't be surprised if there was sort of AI and After Effects trickery that went into that. But yeah, this is purely a profit-based thing. This is basically marketing for PepsiCo, and the money will go towards Formula One and possibly the FIA, because Mohamed Bensalem has been complaining recently that a lot of the deals that go on within Formula One, certainly deals between teams and drivers, outweigh the deals that the FIA gets at times. But it's important that I point out to you, Mr. Bensalem, that the FIA is a not-for-profit organization. It is not about raising funds. It is about the safe and functional performance of sports and motorsports.
For the sake of balance, or
okay, yeah, no, that's good. That's good balance. I'm glad we touched on that. Yeah, that's that will keep us safe, I think, when Bensalem turns his vitriol on us. But yeah, so I think this is just the latest layer of Formula One going, but we could have money. What are you going to do with the money?
If they came out, I've just thought of a reason for this, and that would actually, I wouldn't get me excited for it, but it would make me appreciate what they've been doing. You recall, obviously, when the president of the FIA stuck his nose in once again where it wasn't welcome and decided to suggest that the price tag attached to Formula One was overinflated and caused all that stirring about an outcry. I like the idea that they just sat back, as per the meme, and went, so I took that personally and decided to make even more money. Just for the sake of having, as Bobby Actor would put it, fuck you money, because what's the point in having fuck you money if you can't say fuck you?
Yeah, I think this is a great thing for shareholders in Formula One. So Liberty Media, they will
There's a
be.
way. I found a way to be cheered up about it now.
Yes.
It's just all a big long ploy to go like that.
It's a middle finger to Bernie Eccleston, I suppose, which I think is something
Less
that.
so to, less so to him, I feel like, because this does seem like the kind of thing he would do to annoy someone just
Oh,
because
true.
he
Yeah,
could.
he would have also done this because he was a big enjoyer of sponsors being a part of it. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. How could a sport that's sponsored both by like Louis Vuitton and Tag Heuer also be sponsored by Doritos? Like, I.
Careful there, you've got a bit of Dorito crumb on your Louis Vuitton bag.
Yeah. Oh,
You
no.
want to spill some Pepsi Cola over that?
You've spilt Pepsi back. No, because Tag doesn't do a Pepsi watch. If we still had Rolex.
I thought you were going to go for like a Carlsberg thing though, but if they did.
No, that you can get the a what's called the Pepsi dial on certain Rolexes, and it's like a red blue split dial and face on the watch. It looks quite nice. It's to do with timing and day and night for 24-hour time periods. And that would have been great
You can't look outside. Yeah.
if we still had Rolex as a sponsor, but we do not. So maybe I'm gonna get like a Pepsi branded Tag watch. I don't know.
With Mickey Mouse on it,
With
eating a
Mickey
Dorito.
Mouse made out of Lego eating a Dorito. This is good. I can see, I like where this is going.
Hire us, marketing, hire us. We can do it
Maybe
all for.
the future Lego minifigures that you get with your Lego Formula One car will wear a tiny Lego Tag Heuer watch. I'd quite like that.
I mean, again, hire us. We've got all the ideas.
Please hire us, please. Anyway. Other news inside the world of Formula One is that Victor Martins will be making his Formula One debut in FP1 this weekend, replacing Alex Albon. He's tested a previous car earlier this year at Monza, along with Luke Browning. Obviously, this is the same sort of testing weekend that Alpine had booked out to send Franco
Franco
Colapinto around.
Colapinto.
So yeah, they've decided, you know what, we'll chuck him in on a Grand Prix weekend. Rio Hirakawa is also heading out in FP1, replacing Esteban Ocon at Haas.
Yeah, Victor Martin's Formula 3 champion, obviously, in 2022, P5 and P7 in Formula 2 in the intervening years since then, and currently sits P8 in F2 in 2025. He's had highest finish this year of third, I believe, Detroit in Jeddah last time out, but again, it's not quite gone his way so far this season. He's having a bit of a Dennis Hauger time of it in Formula 2, and might I recommend if this year doesn't go to plan, Indy NXT. Just over here, working wonders for Mr. Hauger so far and revitalizing his career. Maybe something for him to look into, but great to see him at least getting a bit of time in the Williams and like other teams and junior driver programs. They're actually at least following through on everything for the duration of the contract, and not just going, well, we've got you, but we're just not going to use you, and you can go over there in the corner. Interesting, however, that Hirakawa is getting as much seat time as he is. I mean, I'm sure that's probably a tie-in with Toyota and some sponsors in there in this sort of thing, but it's always interesting to me when you get a driver in FP1 that not quite clearly isn't going to be an F1, but has a less obvious pathway to Formula One, let's say, instead.
Does he do any testing for Haas? Does he do like test and reserve bits? Does he do wind tunnel dev stuff, sim stuff? Because I suppose
I imagine so.
that would make sense as to why he at least has some like actual seat time in the car, so he can like tie together how far off development work is. That'd be the argument there. I think that McLaren have the opportunity, however, to do the funniest amount thing possible, which is put Alex Dunn in one of the cars for FP1 as well, and send him out at the same time that Victor Martins heads out on track, and just see if it can happen again going into turn one at Spain.
Well, it's a less tight turn one, so in theory.
You can go round the outside at turn one in Spain as well, but it does bring
Just
back.
don't tell them about turn four. You have to just leave that.
Yeah, it does bring back the brilliant line that was overheard by the microphones in the paddock after both drivers had crashed in the feature race in Monaco, which was I can't remember which driver Victor Martins had been talking to. I think it was Pepe Marti when he goes. In his incredibly thick French accent, who does he think he is, Max Verstappen? And it was, yeah, a perfect rebuttal. And he does appear to then immediately go and try and storm off somewhere, possibly having spotted Alex Dunn. But his team members, I think he was the ART at the moment, sort of literally quite sort of grabbed him by the chest and sort of pulled him backwards. And I was like, oh, we could have had an altercation.
So we could have had the 1990s and the 1980s back. Why did we not let this happen?
He would have been able to imbue the spirit of Nelson Piquet. Anyway, we'll move on from FP1 to F1A and the Formula One Academy, where The Academy is now out on Netflix. This is the sort of Formula One Academy version of Drive to Survive, which looks at and celebrates the successes of the series. Seven episodes in total. Apparently, it's very binge-worthy. Timo, might you be able to confirm? Have you watched it yet?
I'm assuming it's going to be very binge-worthy because we tend to binge-watch anything motorsport-related where binge-watching is a possibility. I have watched the first episode, and a couple of interesting notes that I made on that is that Inigo Bustamante's personal coach doesn't seem to like her very much, which is a bit of an awkward thing for a personal coach to be doing there. You'll notice that, and the editor of that particular episode is also strategically unkind in places, and that's just interesting. Let's put it like that. And there was a comment, I think, early on in the kind of the voiceover. I can't remember who did it now. It might have been Susie herself saying, "We've got 15 of the fastest drivers in the world." And my mind automatically just goes whenever I hear something like that. And Lance Stroll, and I'm like, "Oh no, he's not in this. It's okay. We don't have to include him. I'm just so used to it being like we've got best drivers in the world." And Lance Stroll. I'm always just kind of self-correcting whenever that's in F1 commentary, and I have to stop myself here. Overall, it's a little over-dramatized here and there, but considering the racing itself at points and the lack of action somewhat, that's a bit understandable. First episode mainly focuses on Leah, Bianca, and there's a little bit of Lola and Aurelia Nobles in there as well, which keeps things interesting, let's put it like that, especially as we obviously know how their seasons went, where they've ended up, and how well some of their pre-recorded messages to camera go before they've done certain races. And yeah, I mean, it's the same as F1 is kind of going, this won't age well, but it'll be very amusing when we get to that point of the season.
Yeah, one interesting thing that I had found, I haven't watched it yet, but I have sort of had a look at a few sort of reviews and interesting comments on it. And one of the most interesting comments came from the winner in 2023, who made very quick point to say,
I think I know which quote you're about to say here. Continue.
well, no, it's not a quote. It's a quote of the
All
fact
right.
of, I can't believe they made no mention of the first season of the series. They just sort of
Oh,
leave
yes.
blank it. Yeah, and sort of
I was curious about that actually. I didn't get that bit, but considering, like you say, we had a whole full season, I know I was there. You'd kind of hope there'd be at least a we had a foundation year. You have a flash of some of the drivers, because I think in the first episode, even Abby Bulling saying, "You get 2 seasons to prove yourself, and I'm in my second season," but you get no indication that there was a first season. And we know they've got the coverage of it. They did film it. Quite why we're not sure when they didn't bloody show any of it live, but it did happen.
Yeah,
So, yeah, that is a weird one.
it makes no reference to Marta Garcia winning, going on to join Freca. It makes no sort of hint at that at all. It just sort of goes, okay, we're just going to pretend that this is our first season. We're going to pretend that that one never happened. I'm like, that's a bit rich and a bit of an odd
Especially
line.
considering there were races in that first season. Well, okay, I will have a slight bias here because I've only literally been able to see three, six of them actually. They showed the last one. So there's some great racing in that last round. And from what I heard from others and from what I saw, there was some good racing in the other round, which again, some of the rounds last year, hit and miss. So yeah, a little bit rich, like you say, to go. There's no need to make a reference to it. It was at least as good, if not slightly better. So I
Yeah.
wouldn't, it's not something you've got to hide.
I guarantee when I go to watch it, someone will say, it's a brand new series. And I'll go, no, it's not. It's a year old. And that's, yeah. Again, I think there has to be some sort of creative liberty allowed. However, it is a creative medium. And again, much like a lot of the F1 drivers said about the F1 movie that they got to preview ahead of Monaco, you'll enjoy it if you just sort of passingly like motorsports. If you're a dyed-in-the-wool F1 fan, you're going to be left at
This
scratch at a few
this
points.
is what I keep trying to hit home for you to go, like, just don't be as involved as you want to be, and you'll enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah, I wasn't going to take that same statement from you, but from maybe Kimmy Antonelli or Carlton Science, I will listen
Yeah,
to
but
it.
now that they agree with me.
Yeah, they agree with you, but I'm still taking it as their statement that I'm actually getting on board with. Meanwhile, while we're talking about feeder series, we'll move to Formula 3, where there is two interesting pieces of news here, actually. Mexican driver Jesse Carrascuedo will be replacing Joshua Dufek at Hi-Tech TGR for the Spanish and Austrian rounds of the season. Excellent name. Keep up the good work. Over at AIX, Jose Garfiath will... I'm assuming that's how he pronounces his name, will replace James Headley, who was injured in the Monaco sprint race. So, yeah, all change, two fresh drivers into the season, and we'll see how they perform. I think Jesse is currently competing in Freca. I haven't seen where Jose comes from.
Yeah, Jose, I didn't have time to have a look into him, so I can't really talk about him, unfortunately. Carrasquedo, he started a single seat in 22 in Spanish F4. He's also been in the European Regional Championship by Alpine and from the Regional Middle East and Euro Cup 3. So he's done a little bit of here, there, and everywhere. But yeah, he kind of knows what he's doing. He also took part in the 2024 postseason test, I want to say, in Jerez and Barcelona. So he's up to speed, at least, with things. It's just in terms of racing, we don't know. And it's interesting that he's only got a couple of rounds as well to confirm so far. We don't know anything else just yet, but it's Formula 3, these things change pretty darn quickly.
Yeah, Jose currently in Euro Formula Open Series. So again, one of those sort of generic Formula 3 sort of championships. So it's sort of a good sort of step inwards towards the main FIA sort of ladder as it goes. But yeah, it's interesting times, and again, a great chance to showcase some new talents. And we saw again some of the drivers that had like one shots towards the end of the Formula 3 and Formula 2 season made great hay with them, and were able to bag themselves sort of season-long seats this year as well. So it's not to be sniffed at. Anyway, we move into some fun facts ahead of the Spanish Grand Prix. And well, this one's not quite as interesting, but 91% of the Spanish Grand Prix winners at Barcelona have come from the front row of the grid. And since 2016, the Spanish Grand Prix has only been won by Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen.
Ferrari, it's our time, baby. It's gotta happen.
Or McLaren or Williams.
No, it's one of the two of them. The statistics say so.
Well, since 2016, well, Lewis was at Mercedes and Max was at Red Bull. So,
Yeah, but it's one of those two.
yeah, it's
So,
going to
Lewis.
be. Yeah, we'll see. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, Lewis is at Ferrari now. I get what your statement was. I'm with you.
It wasn't even that complicated.
I've had one of those days. You'll have to forgive me. I need some Gatorade
Continue.
and a bowl of Doritos. But anyway, we've also gone from the softest tires in the Pirelli range to the hardest, the C1, the C2, and the C3, which is sensible actually, because it's quite a high deg, high force circuit with some high speed corners included in it as well. So obviously, I don't think even the hardest of soft tires would be able to make it all the way through this. But the C1, C2, and C3 have been improved since last season. We've got a better spread of degradation through the tires and a better spread of softness through this end of the range as well, which should mean there's a sort of more obvious delta between certain compounds, and we should get potentially two stoppers, which is what Pirelli is expecting. But I
And not one of these Monaco kind of two stoppers, a proper two
no,
stopper.
a genuine two stopper where potentially you will, even then you will chew through the hards, because it's incredibly hard wearing on the outer edges of the tire as well, because you're leaning on the tire a lot through the corners. And I think it's the rear right is also incredibly under high load because of the amount of turns going through the circuit. Add into that the new technical directive TD018 brings with it new rules about front wing stiffness. Mercedes made some changes to their wing going into Imola, and it has significantly impacted their performance, regardless of how they set it up. Even for Monaco or for Imola, they weren't really able to get that front end tied down, and it was impacting balance down the length of the car. We saw both drivers struggling with it over the past 2 weekends. McLaren have stated that they won't be making any changes to meet this new technical regulation, which will be interesting if true. However, the one team that I don't think will be impacted by this is Red Bull, who have had a fairly constant front wing for quite some time. And importantly, this is a circuit that could favour the Red Bull car. I think it might also favour Williams a little bit as well. But certainly when it comes to the McLaren-Red Bull battle, this is one that might swing the way of Milton Keynes.
This could be interesting for two reasons, really. One being, well, they're related, but the first being, if they don't change anything and they're found to have not complied, essentially, that obviously starts leading into disqualification territory for a Grand Prix. And if it's Red Bull favored, then A, that helps the statistics that we've just been talking about, but also closes that gap up in the championship significantly if you're Max Verstappen. But does raise an interesting question for you and I is how would that impact our predictions? Do we need to change them?
See, I originally laid down some predictions, did some digging, did a bit of reading about front wings and the setup that the team's used so far, and then made some changes to my predictions for this weekend. So I've got some that are slightly more angled towards cars that I feel won't be so impacted this weekend and may.
I may make some changes just now and then regret this when nothing actually happened, but I'm just going to have a little think about this for a second, whilst you maybe lead the way on that one, and I have a think.
It's going to be an interesting one. The high speed nature of Barcelona, I think, is one that's going to favour certain teams. And again, it's one of those circuits where if you've got drivers that are happy with a slightly looser car, you can simply take a bit of wing off and just sort of chuck them at the circuit with a desperate hope for the top speed will solve any ills, which can work for some teams, might not work for others. It really depends on how well developed your car is. I can see Timo typing away on the Google Doc and he is thinking hard. So I'm going to have to keep riffing as I go. But yeah, TDO18 is something that's been called for quite some time to address front wing stiffness. And it's something that McLaren have been accused of flaunting for a little while. So the question is, if they don't have to change anything and they are found to still be legal, this is great for McLaren because it proves that they've been on the right track for some time. If they don't change anything and found to be illegal, like Timo mentioned, we could have some interesting repercussions. And if they do come with a front wing, it just proves that they were lying all this time, but now they are legal with the current specs and regulations. Have you finished typing?
I have, and I have one final question with the predictions. Say, for example, you predict a Red Bull driver to win, but they inherit the winning. You're still going to count that as supposedly what you predicted, because normally we do this as a they win on track sort of thing. We don't often find ourselves in this territory. And I
Oh,
feel like my inner Ellie Mae needs to clarify.
that's a good question. I think we do.
Because if, because if, because I'm spoilers going to predict Max Verstappen for second place. If he gets second, but then it's handed the win post race, I then lose the point for second place. But I was correct at the same time.
Okay, so when I fill out the big spreadsheet, which I use to keep track of like points across the season, I wait until I get the final classification from the FIA. That's what I base this entirely
Which
on.
ordinarily I wouldn't have a problem with.
But also what it means is that is the final classification as the cars come out of Parc Fermé, where they have been checked for by stewards and technical regulators to make sure they all meet standards. So that's the point where a car would be disqualified. If you would like to state that your prediction is as they cross the line, I will accept that. However,
That also feels like a trap now, though.
subsequent changes made due to cars flaunting technical regulations will leave you vulnerable to losing points. So I'm going by.
I put it to you, which way are you doing it? Because then at least you're in the same boat.
I am go I will be I've made mine based on
Yes, how are you measuring them? Are
I
you
will
doing
be
them as they cross the line, or are you doing them as they come out of Parc Fermé and have the official final results?
This will be done by Park post Parc Fermé final results, the final classification issued by the FIA. That's what I've used to make my predictions, as well as technical knowledge based on the upgrades and directives that are being thrown at the teams this weekend.
Then bugger it, that is how I shall do it as well, and I shall hope for the best, as I
You,
always do with these, let's face it.
this is how you believe that McLaren will have a perfectly fine illegal front wing that will give you the point for a win. However,
I think one of them will.
oh, I think
That's how I'm getting around this.
we both think one of them will, but we've put that one of them at different points on the podium. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, when it comes to predictions, it's time for the pole position predictions. And Timo, your pole position prediction, please.
As it clearly was this whole time, Charles Leclerc.
Not Oscar Piastri.
No, that would be a silly thing to predict.
Yeah, Charles Leclerc. I've gone for Max Verstappen. I think that he knows this circuit well, and he knows where he can absolutely extract 110% out of that Red Bull. And I think we're going to see a bit like Japan, a Max Verstappen that's just imperious in nature this weekend, and it might lead to a bit of a dull race, but
We're used to those.
we're a bit used to those, especially coming at the back of Monaco, where the only on track overtake outside the top 10 was made by Lance Stroll, I hasten to add.
You hasten to add it all you want. He's still terrible.
Fine. But anyway, yeah, I think we're going to have an imperious performance by Max Verstappen, which is why I've put him at the top of my podium as well. Max Verstappen to win, Oscar Piastri second, and then Charles Leclerc in third. You've gone for a bit of a remix on that idea.
Which was clearly a thought process I had this entire time, and I've saved Leclerc for later because while he doesn't make it onto my podium, I do make sure he's looked after, which was always the plan. I've gone for Piastri to win, Verstappen second, and then Mr. Lewis Hamilton third.
That's an in
Similar but different to you.
similar but different. Both a McLaren and a Red Bull on the top two steps, and then a Ferrari in position number three. Yeah, I like your thinking. I think it's gonna be an interesting one. Fastest lap. You haven't made a change here.
No, I didn't feel the need to make a change anywhere, really. I was all predetermined. But Max Verstappen, fastest lap there. Like you say, he knows the track really well. He loves it really well. It's where he got his first wins. And he might just look very, very speedy here. So I think why not fastest lap, banging it at the end and just kind of hammer home the advantage he has on a track like this, where it's not going to be there all season long. But when it is, he will make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah, I agree with you that I think it's going to be a Max Verstappen fastest lap. I mean, we've seen him do it before in incredible circumstances where he's even had GP on his radio going sort of, that's black and white for track limits, don't push it. And Max then asks, what's the fastest lap? And GP goes, don't worry about it. And Max sets the fastest lap and GP goes, well done, bring it home inside the lines. And that is the Max Verstappen I think we're going to see operating this weekend. I think he's going to be able to.
I won't be asking for a point for it, but I think that if for whatever reason Verstappen doesn't do it, Cheeky Williams fastest lap, maybe an Alex Albon would be fun as well.
It would be interesting to see a Williams fastest lap because their car they understand their car
Especially in Spain, their last win, Casta
yeah
Maldonado 2012, it's doable.
historically it's a circuit that Williams goes well at, and also I'm just thinking they're a team that would take that risk of sort of stripping a bit of downforce off the car to go for outright speed. They know that both their drivers like a car that's a bit looser and a bit more chuckable and therefore could
While
sort
they
of
wouldn't
get
gain
that
anything
balance.
from it, it would just be a nice demonstration of what they're capable of.
Yeah, I think it would give James Vowles another sort of positive message to take away in his sort of like end of weekend video. So I think, yeah, an Alex Albon fastest lap. We can put that as a little addendum to what we've predicted, but overall it's between the two of us and Max Verstappen fastest lap. Wild predictions. Timo, you said you were going to address Charles Leclerc, so I'll let you say yours.
Well, yes, I was trying to think of something a bit different, and this is why, because we haven't had both Ferraris in the top five yet this season. So for it to happen would be a bit wild. So that is how I'm going to bring Charles Leclerc back into play. He's going to be in there somewhere, and if my podium is going to be correct, then he's either going P4 or P5. We've got them both happy days after the races, which they will be.
No, that's a fun shout. I like that. That's a interesting one. I think it's going to be interesting to see if we can get both Ferraris up there as well. Certainly in the top five, we'll be really starting to punch for them. Meanwhile, I've gone equally as bold. I think double stake points. I think there's going to be a bit of
You
chaos.
saw the success I had with Bortoleto last week and you thought, give me some of that.
I just have a sneaking suspicion they might do something this weekend. What they are doing is
You
apparently.
said that all of last year.
What they are doing, however, is a new livery for this weekend yet again. It
Why?
looks like the same one, but it's sort of digitized and cubic-y and things. It looks as bad as it
I know
always
you're
does.
not spending money on the car, guys, but geez. You can at least try and find a better way of spending it.
Yeah, decisions were made there, and I don't know. I think they're just going to both. It's going to be like a P9 and a P10 or a P8 and a P10. I'm not expecting huge things from them, but I think we're going to see Bortoleto get a point on the board, and crucially, what that'll do is put him above Fernando
Franco
Alonso
Colapinto.
and Franco Colapinto and Jack Doohan, because all of a sudden, it's just funny that Alonso hasn't scored points yet, and I
It's
have a.
sad is what it is.
It's sad as well, and I have a sad feeling that Bortoleto is going to come home ahead of Alonso, because isn't Bortoleto managed by Alonso as well?
He is,
Yeah,
and
so
he'll receive a hiding for it if he finishes ahead of him. That's
yeah,
all I know.
there will be a painful irony there. And again, one of those, I think Bortoletto's joked before that Alonso didn't let him have any dinner on the plane on the flight home. So yeah, that's my theory going into this weekend. Otherwise, that brings us nicely to the end of this week's preview podcast. Obviously, our review for the Monaco Grand Prix is out on the usual platforms. We'll be back next week with a review of the Spanish Grand Prix. In the meantime, though, Timo, any more from you? Obviously, you mentioned a lot of IndyCar at the top of the show. Where can people go and read that and listen to that?
Yes, I've got my review of the Indianapolis 500, the 109th running of that legendary race is out over on the Curbs IndyCar with myself and Nate Woods, and the accompanying article will be out on everything F1 in due course with some of the key moments from the race from a few of us over there. If you want something a bit different, Normal on the Curbs has a brand new interview with Jordanian racing driver Ran Hadaddin, who recently competed in Rally Jameel, so do go and give that a listen and a watch.
Excellent stuff indeed. And if you'd like more from me, you can find me online as at Jesse on Cars, and you can find my work in Classic Car Weekly. The latest issue came out today. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what's in it, but it's worth reading. Go
Classic
and read that.
cars.
Yeah, Classic Cars and news.
If in doubt.
And obviously, the Classic Car Weekly podcast goes out every week. We're recording tomorrow, so I'll have that turnaround out as well on all the usual platforms if you want even more of my wonderful voice. Otherwise, that's all we've got time for. Don't give me that look. We'll be back next week with a review of the Spanish Grand Prix. Thank you very much for listening.